This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. For today's arts edition of the program, we continue our celebration of April as Jazz Appreciation Month with an hour of music performed live in studio by members of the Florida Gulf Coast University Jazz Nonet. Last week, we featured original compositions performed live by members of the Brandon Robertson Quintet, ahead of Robertson's debut album release later this year. And today, Robertson, who serves as Director of Jazz Studies at FGCU's Bauer School of Music, is back, this time with several of his music students who have spent the last semester studying the music of Miles Davis and Gil Evans from the 1957 compilation album Birth of the Cool, which served as a pivotal turning point in American jazz music. Tracks on the album come from a series of session recordings between 1949 and 1950. The music was a departure from the more prominent bebop jazz style of the time, including innovative arrangements infused with elements of classical music and including instruments that had been somewhat underutilized in the world of jazz. The FGCU Jazz Nonet is with us in the WGCU Performance Studio today to tell us more about the significance of this album and to perform selections from it. Members of the ensemble include Manessa Abraham on French horn, Tony Claro on trumpet, Gabriela De Leon performing on the alto saxophone, Evan Esposito on tuba, Alexander Granados on trombone, Stephen McMullen on drums, Melissa Sanchez on the keys, Isaiah Suriel playing the baritone saxophone, and Jonathan Taylor on bass. Welcome all of you to Gulf Coast Live today. Thanks so much for sharing your talents and your time with us.
Thank you.
And as always, I invite listeners to join the conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And we'll get into the discussion portion of our program in just a bit. But first, let's go ahead and kick things off with a song. I understand we're going to hear Boplicity. Does one of you maybe want to take the microphone and tell us just a little bit about this song first by way of introduction?
Yeah.
And this is our trombone player.
Yeah, well, this is Boplicity from Birth of the Cool. And, you know, it's by Miles Davis and Gil Evans. And a lot of amazing musicians are on this track. And one of the trombone players is actually J.J. Johnson, which is, I mean, he's one of the most prolific trombone players to even be in the jazz idiom, you know what I mean? And like, he took traits and characteristics from like the saxophone and the trumpet and implemented it on a more awkward instrument, I would say. And he was actually the first call for this record, and here this is.
All right, well, thanks for that introduction, Alex. Now let's hear Boplicity. Thank you. And that was Boplicity, performed by members of the FGCU Jazz Nonet with us in studio today. They'll be performing throughout the hour, and these are going to be songs from the 1957 jazz album Birth of Cool. Professor Robertson, I got to ask, how did this project come together in the first place? Was this something student-generated, or was this more like an assignment from you?
So in the past, I've found I teach a jazz methods course here at FGCU, and in that class, which is catered to the music education students, I noticed that a lot of them had a lack of historical content that was presented to them. And so I had to find a way to incorporate the historical side of it into the music. And what better way to do that is through my chamber groups that I teach here. So this project was presented last semester, and I came up with the idea of putting together a non-tet, and I have a lot of students who will come up to me on various instruments, particularly the clarinet. I've had one of the bassoon students ask me, you know, hey, can I do some jazz? And, you know, I had to think about, like, well, what instrumentation can I actually present in a good manner to be the best representation for that genre? So it was this group. And I thought about it. I was like, wait a minute, the Birth of the Cool album. You know, it has non-jazz instrumentations that are featured. And just to give a quick background, you know, when Miles Davis was part of the Charlie Parker quintet, you know, he was having some turmoil between him and Parker. And at this time, you know, Miles has always been a forward thinker. So, you know, he wanted to kind of move in a different direction. And Gil Evans, who's his own respective arranger, all the orchestrations that he was known for doing, you know, he was also a forward thinker. So when these two met in the mid-40s, it was like a match made in heaven. And then they came up with this concept of, well, we want to put together a group that can actually insist on featuring non-jazz instruments. So this is where baritone saxophone player Jerry Mulligan came into play. And he was part of the Claude Thornhill Orchestra. And Claude Thornhill, who had probably a very huge influential impact on that particular group. So this is what I wanted to showcase to the audience and let them know, like, hey, we can feature non-jazz instrumentation such as the French horn or the tuba in these kind of settings.
All right. Well, let's just jump right back into it with another song. This time we're going to hear Godchild. Does somebody else want to grab the mic and maybe tell us a little bit about this song by way of introduction?
Hi there. Good afternoon. So Godchild will be, it was arranged and also made by Jerry Mulligan, who is the bari saxophone for this group back in the day when they performed it with Miles Davis. He's also very known to be one of the more prolific baritone saxophones of the era when Cool Swing was coming up and about. And his discography is huge. It went all the way from the early 1950s all the way to almost when he passed away in early 1996. So this is Godchild.
All right. Thank you. That was FGCU Jazz Nanette performing Godchild, and that's from the seminal 1957 Miles Davis album, Birth of the Cool. Members of the group have spent the last semester studying the album and its impact. Listeners can join our conversation today. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And Professor Robertson, you had talked before about, you know, trying to bring in sort of that historical knowledge, musically speaking. And I was kind of reading about the origins of this album and kind of like pining for the ability to travel back in time and just be like a fly on the wall in the salon-like atmosphere of Gil Evans' basement apartment in Manhattan with these, you know, other like-minded musicians kind of coming and going. Is that sort of part of the education that you bring to it as well? Just sort of the talking about the era itself?
Yeah, so that particular era, you know, we in America, there was a lot of things happening. You know, we had World War I occurring. Mm-hmm. You know, we had this divide in the country. You know, Pearl Harbor had just occurred. And, you know, there was still segregation that was occurring in the South. But up in the Northeast area, you know, music was flourishing, you know, especially with jazz. And this new hip genre that was spawning out on the scene, bebop, you know, kind of just changed everything, which actually in some regards started to diminish the incline of the big band era. So, mm-hmm. you know, you had this wave that things were kind of transitioning into more smaller groups and the music was getting faster. It was getting a little more complex. And so I think Miles coming up during that era, you know, he was just, you know, I like to look at it. Maybe Miles got bored and was like, you know, I want to do something different. And I want to follow the wave that, you know, Dizzy and Charlie Parker had kind of set the tone with this new thing called bebop. But I believe once he met Gil Evans, it opened his horizons of what music should be moving forward. There should be a continuous effort to kind of push the music, to push the envelope and let the music move forward. So I believe during that time frame, you know, when those two met and they were seeking out the individuals for this particular group, it was great that he was able to find other forward thinking musicians that were on the same wavelength as he was. And I think that kind of helped propel what the album sounds like right now.
Well, and just like you're bringing in some, you know, more traditionally classically trained musicians, mm-hmm. for an ensemble like this, did they have to look outside of jazz to find the folks they needed?
Well, at that time, you got to think, this is like late 40s. So, I mean, New York was, man. A lot of these guys lived together. I mean, if you think of where a lot of these musicians were hosted in Manhattan, I mean, majority of them all lived on the same block. You know, for every few blocks, you know, you're around greats like, you know, Miles, Charlie Parker, Red Rodney, Bud Powell. You know, you have all these big names that are just kind of all around you. So the influence was there. And even though some of these guys were classically trained, the music itself, once you're invested into it, you know, it's there. And I think that's why Gil Evans was such a prolific arranger, because he was able to through-compose some of these charts that made it very similar to what the classical musicians were reading, you know, in their era. You know, one in particular, he had guys in the band that could read music and they understood compositions and they understood transitions between each song. So if you listen to the previous songs that the ensemble just performed, you can hear those transitions. You can hear the different meter changes. You can hear how melodically the song itself is moving. So that was forward thinking in that time frame, you know?
Yeah. And just, you know, the more relaxed tempo, the lighter tones, you know, the departure from bebop. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about how that was, the album was received when it came out. Because I'm thinking, on the one hand, you know, you might be alienating your bebop diehards, but on the other hand, you know, combining these other styles might actually make the jazz music more accessible to broader audiences. Or I could be completely off base.
No, so, I mean, you know, dance music was still popular. I mean, we were coming out of an era where, you know, the jazz music was still the popular form of music, you know, in America. And you had these big bands that were performing for hours and hours and people would be dancing. So you got to understand, when bebop spun up, it was like, I can't dance to this.
Right, right.
So, but then you also have these avid listeners who really enjoyed the musical concepts of jazz. And so when I feel like this album was presented, you had a split down the middle. You had those who were used to hearing the Miles, the young virtuosic Miles that was very vibrant and, you know, passionate and play with all these fiery licks. But then you got this modal side of Miles that was relaxed, calm, and like you said, lighthearted, that was easy to listen to. It was easy for the ear, especially for people who would listen to this on the radio. Yeah. You know, so.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move right on to our third song. And again, I'm going to ask one of our performers to introduce this one for us. All right. And this is, this is our trumpet player, Tony.
All right. Hello. So the next tune is Jeru, with also Gary Mulligan as well. Something that I like about the tunes that we've played, as well as this tune, is what Professor Robertson mentioned earlier about the tonal side of Miles Davis. This piece sounds like a major piece, and it has some inflections here and there. And when I think of Birth of the Cool, I think of the cool. It's something completely out of context. You know, we're going from bebop directly into something that has like a tonal center or whatever. And it's very, to me, it's kind of not just eye opening, but kind of like spiritually opening, because we're going from like like all that type of stuff to and it's just a complete switch, but it's a nice change. It's refreshing, and it kind of just reminds us that there's like other stuff out there to be able to play. So, right. And further ado, here's Jeru.
All right, thanks for the insight, Tony.
Thank you.
And if you're just joining the show, we are joined today by the FGCU Jazz Nonet. They're performing pieces from the iconic jazz record, Birth of the Cool. We just heard them performing Jeru. And we're here with their professor, Brandon Robertson, as well. And I have to ask, because I've done interviews with you know, classically trained musicians who, you know, solo with symphonies, about how they prepare for certain pieces, particularly when a piece of music has become synonymous with a particular performer. And just an example I'll throw out, like cellist Jacqueline Dupree's interpretation of the Elgar Cello Concerto has become so synonymous with it that sometimes it's hard to tell where Elgar ends and she begins. So I've spoken with multiple cellists who performed that piece in the past, and they told me the first thing they did was put those recordings away because they don't want to, you know, emulate her in some way that it, you know, stops them from putting their own interpretation on it. Is that a concern when you're talking about playing songs from an album like this? Because I would think, given let's just go ahead. Let's hear from our trombone player. And this Alex.
To answer that question, one of the things that I find is that, and this is something that we kind of just subconsciously do throughout like our whole life in terms of what we want to learn and what we want to add to our like ego and persona. You know, so you have to filter through. So you have to understand what this is and its veracity of it, and then find where the veracity lies within you. You know, so like I listen like to all these pieces, and you know, I can hear JJ or Kai Winding on some of these pieces, and I take their inflection into consideration, but it's more or less I find myself through that, you know. So while I mean, they say Bill Evans said that teaching style is one of the most dangerous things to do, and it has the potential to be that dangerous, but you have to look at it with the perspective that you are not somebody else, and you are you. And that's why, I mean, so many people can play, you know, a different Nonet could play all of these tunes, you know, and it would sound different, because we all have different human emotions. And that is why music will always be around, because we always have emotions to express. We always have feeling. We have this desire to express ourselves perfectly through an imperfect medium.
Well said.
Yeah. So, to basically answer your question, it's like a thing you take into consideration, but you just have to know where the truth lies.
All right. And I also noticed today in this room that, you know, we've got 9 performers here, and 3 of them are women. And jazz, from what I've seen, seems to be a male-dominated field. So, you know, I would love to hear from Gabriella and our other, and Melissa here about what, and of course, I'm sorry, what, you know, it kind of means to be playing jazz music as a woman in this group.
I believe as a woman, we need to, like, not step up our game, but we get slept on. Like, if I don't know if you know what I mean by that term. I feel like we have probably even more potential as men, no offense, men, but we need to come out more. I actually, like, really reached out for jazz. This is the reason I came to FGCU, was for the jazz program.
Oh, yeah?
Because this is actually the only school I applied for after hearing the jazz band. And I just was just like, I want to be in it. And I kind of just went for it. You know, I'm like, why not audition? You know, I'm in jazz. I get lessons from Dan Miller. And I'm like, I'll just try. And like, I made it. And I'm so fortunate, because it's crazy to see how many little people are in jazz band. Like, this is the Nonet, and there's 3 of us. In jazz band, it's usually just me and the pianist, Melissa.
Wow.
So it's, you know, I kind of want to see more variety. But I think as time goes, it will increase more.
All right. And Manessa, I want to ask you about this as well, because I don't usually equate your instrument with jazz.
Yes, as a horn player, I have been more classically trained and raised in that area. I did experience jazz band one time in middle school, but I played trumpet. I didn't play horn when I did it, so it's still not the same thing. And this experience has been really fun for me, because I'm not exposed to this very often. And there are horn players that play jazz. There are 3 different that played on this recording, actually, on this album. Mm-hmm. And one of the names is Junior Collins, Sandy Spielston. And it is a really good opportunity to be able to expand my horizons and be able to experience more things. And I think as a musician, it's helped me to grow more. Like, my rhythm's gotten better because everything's so syncopated.
Yeah.
And you can't think too much about it, because if you think too hard, then you're going to mess it up just automatically, because it's so relaxed. You can't just jump right in thinking it all methodically about it. which sometimes classical music does do that, where it's all set in its own little individual boxes. So jazz has helped me to become more well-rounded, and I think I'll have better opportunities because I've done this. So I'll be able to have like an avenue to go through if I'm ever trying to look for different jobs.
All right. And I'm going to pass the microphone over to Melissa here as well. I'm curious if, like Manessa, you came from more of the classical background.
Yeah, so I've been playing classical piano since I was 7 years old, and I found jazz very, very interesting because it opens the door to new opportunities to express yourself and to kind of improvise, because classical music is sometimes very expressive, but you also need different technique to play. And the jazz has this freedom of chords, and it's other way to see music that it also helps you to be more yourself, to find that music that you can use to express what you like or in the moment is more, I can't find the word. So, yeah, it's more like it opens the door to improvisation. That's what I can say. So it's very good.
All right. Well, on that note, let's go ahead and hear our fourth song today. And this is going to be Deception. Who wants to take the mic and maybe tell us a little bit about this one first? All right. And this is our tuba player today. Evan.
Hi, I'm Evan. Deception. This is a little bit more of the simplistic versions of one of the songs on this track, especially for my end. Tuba within this incorporated within this piece, along with the rest of the album, definitely breaks away from the typical barrier of like traditional tuba playing. You know, the stereotype is very, like, you know, either very Oompa Loompa-ish, you know, very, uh-huh. like, a typical march, you know, that's where you typically see tubas in, you know, or it's very, very, follows, like, the typical structure of ensembles. It tends to be, you know, at the base of the pyramid, you know, supporting everyone. So the benefit of playing charts like these, and especially within Deception, and all throughout, across this album, is that it allows me as a tuba player to now jump out, play moving lines, play melodies, you know, play unison with higher voices, and rather than just sitting back being the support for them. So, and interesting enough, within this album, the tuba player originally was the on the for this album recorded this, Bill Barber, he actually, interesting enough, he pretty much, you know, revolutionized, refashioned the whole concept of traditional tuba playing. You know, of years prior, before this album, it was very much, you know, like just, you know, classical. You know, there's rules and regulations when it came to playing tuba. But as soon as he came in, it was he pretty much through the medium of this album was. Introduced what being a jazz tuba player, you know, what it is, you know, he pretty much was the leeway for incorporating tuba into jazz studies and jazz music, and also being a leeway for more modern jazz, you know, now incorporating more tuba, but just more bass voice. Right. So yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for that introduction. And now we're going to hear the Nanette perform Deception.
Thank you.
And that was Deception from the seminal 1957 jazz album Birth of the Cool, performed live in studio today by the FGCU Jazz Nanette. And as a reminder, listeners can join our conversation by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Now I just wanted to get to know kind of some of the members of the ensemble a little individually, starting with Isaiah. I think this is like your second or third time here in our performance studio.
This is my second time on the radio. Thank you for having me again, by the way, John. First time here was actually last semester with the quintet, the combo.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing a lot of different types of music. It was Monk, some Davis, some Sonny Rollins here and there, and that was my first time on the radio, and it was such a great time, so I was excited to come back and join the segment again.
Your saxophone's gotten a bit larger since the last time
you were here. There's this thing called Miracle-Gro.
Yeah.
Just spray load on it. So last semester, you may have remembered me playing alto saxophone. This is a baritone saxophone that Gary Mulligan plays on this record. What was interesting about playing baritone saxophone is it's not particularly new to the jazz medium. It was newer to me only specifically because it has a darker, deeper sound. So I had to take a different approach to it when approaching this music. And since this is a pivotal album of the time, many consider this album to be very timeless, because it was something brand new that no one has heard of that was brought to the table. And I want to actually note something about Deception, what we just played. If you guys have ever heard the classical piece where it goes da 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 da, you can hear some of that in the main melody for Deception, and that was something that was that's used a lot in jazz today, that they try to quote different music from different areas and try to fit it within what's being played, in order to give it the sense of a flair that it did. And it works very well.
All right. And tell me about your future plans. What do you hope to do, you know, when you're finished studying music here at FGCU?
Well, when I'm done studying, for the most part very soon, what's been happening outside of school recently was I've been finding different ensembles, different performance groups within the Southwest Florida area, and through that, like, I found different goals for me to try to aspire to, as the transition of me studying here and then transitioning from leaving. And like, I teach on the side, I tutor some students over by Miller Sheet Music in Bonita Springs, and as well as when I perform with different groups, I've met people of all ages, of all different musical backgrounds. I've met two particular people who recently graduated from Berkeley in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them just happens to be a native in the Naples area. And just running into them, they found me by accident. And then ever since then, I've been performing with them with a lot of jazz standards. And it's really cool. It's brought a different type of perspective for me to go for.
All right. And can you maybe just pass the mic a little behind you to our bass player here? And this is Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan is also returning to the WGCU studios. He performed with the Jazz Combo last semester. And I think you have the distinction of being the only one who's technically not a music major. You're studying in the health sciences. So are you looking to kind of have like dual career paths?
I was That's the idea, yeah. I'm doing nursing. Actually, I recently got accepted into the nursing program at FGCU a couple weeks ago.
Congratulations.
And I'm really looking forward to getting started. But the whole plan is that, you know, I mean, it's the best of two worlds, you know. I get to help people outside of the hospital and at the hospital. And then, you know, I'd really like to continue with gigs on the side, too, if I can. And, I mean, I've already gotten my foot in the door with, you know, a couple people in the area. And actually, I got to play with the same person that Isaiah got to play alongside with a couple weeks ago, too.
All
right. But, yeah, that's about it. I really like playing music and doing both, you know.
Excellent. Yeah, I love keeping those options open. Well, Gabriella, on alto sax today, we heard from you just a little bit earlier, but I didn't get to ask you about what your plans are.
Hi, my plan is to actually graduate from FGCU as music ed. And I would like to be able to teach students, like high school, or any age, actually, because I just feel like music is a big part, should be a big part of your life. I consider it like a second language. Like, it's just the way you express yourself. And I actually like the way I decided to pursue this career because the way it affected me. Music had, like, a really positive impact, and I like to share that impact with other people because I think, you know, everyone should have positivity in their life. But, yeah, that's pretty much my goal for FGCU graduating.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and hear another song, and then when we come back, we'll hear from more of the individual members. This time we're going to hear Juiced at the Roost. Love that alliteration. Anyone want to introduce this one? All right, and we're back to Tony Clare. Oh, okay.
All right, hello. So Juice at the Roost actually was the original kind of maker of this ensemble. Manessa and I, part of being a music major, we have to have a recital throughout our college career, and we chose to do something fun towards the end of our recital, and Juice at the Roost was it. And this tune, I kind of picture a whole bunch of chickens running around.
Okay.
Just keep that in mind when you're listening to it.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, so that's all. Juice at the Roost.
Thank you.
just heard Juiced at the Roost from the 1957 jazz album Birth of the Cool, performed by musicians with the FGCU Jazz Nonet. And we've got a few minutes left here and a couple more songs to get in. So we'll keep this brief, but I want to meet a few more members of the band. And I'm hoping we can just turn it right back over to our trumpet player here for a minute. Tell us a little bit about, what your plans are, once you leave FGCU here.
All right. Well, I'm a music ed major, and I'm very into the education portion of music. And for a while, I've performed a lot. I took lessons a lot from Dan Miller, Mark Petty, from my high school band director, Skip Party, Steve DeLaTorante, just people in the area because I'm from Naples. And then after a while, when I went to college, I started realizing that my passion isn't just music and playing music. It's also being able to help others perform and to be able to sit back, hear everything, and just take into kind of like consideration what other musicians, whether they're younger or older than me, what they are getting from it as well. So my goal is to be able to spread the passion of music throughout my life. And I'd like to start in high school or middle school. elementary school, I can't. I think little kids are really funny, so I can't really I just can't. So middle school and high school, preferably. Okay. and then eventually maybe university level. But towards the end of my life, around when I'm about like 70 or 80, I'd like to open up a shop where I can allow anyone to come play, like any those with disabilities, anything, just be able to come in, play whatever instrument they have their eyes on. And then also need-based students to be able to come in, afford instruments, and just try to spread music that way. Because if I can't wave my arms later, then I might as well come in and play music. So, but yeah.
And if you could pass that back to Stephen McMullen behind you on the drums. I think you're the only one we haven't heard from in the microphone yet, so I wanted to bring you into the conversation here. Are you focused on music education as well?
Yeah, I'm headed towards finishing up music education. I really want to get into elementary education, and then on the side, I'm also really big into the marching arts and that whole program, and I wanted to get into show design from that sense, because I think that's a very interesting medium for a lot of kids to help find music in their life.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get right back to it. This time we're going to hear Venus de Milo, and let's just go ahead and hear the song, because we're a little short on time.
Thank you.
you just heard was Venus de Milo, performed by the FGCU Jazz Nonette. They've been on the show this past hour, performing selections from the 1957 iconic jazz album, Birth of the Cool. It's been so great having you all here with us today. You are listening to WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. And again, I just want to thank everybody who's been part of the show. FGCU Jazz Studies Professor Brandon Robertson, and of course the members of the Nonette today are Manessa Abraham on French horn, Tony Claro on trumpet, Gabriela De Leon on alto saxophone, Evan Esposito on tuba, Alex Granados on trombone, Stephen McMullen on drums, Melissa Sanchez on piano, Isaiah Suriel playing the baritone horn today, and Jonathan Taylor on bass. Thanks so much to all of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And why don't we go ahead and take us out with one last song. Now we're going to hear Rocker.
A one.